Welcome, everybody. This is Todd Bieber, the creative director of UCB Comedy, and this is the UCB Digital Podcast. This week, we have a panel featuring the writers of Key & Peele. I'm going to be talking to Ian Roberts, one of the founders of Upright Citizens Brigade. He's also bringing along Colton Dunn, Becky Drysdale, and Phil Jackson. These are all UCB performers who have gone on to write for Key & Peele and some other impressive shows. I don't know if there's a sketch show on television right now that's more respected than Key & Peele. Unbelievable performances, hilarious writing, and the filmmaking is just bar none compared to anything I've seen in sketch before. We sat down with the writers to talk about the creative process of creating Key & Peele.
Maybe we get started. Guys, welcome to the UCB Digital Space. This is your first time here, right, Ian?
It is.
And all of you
and
guys?
Mine.
Yeah. Yeah. My first time when everything's fixed up. I took a walk through while it was under construction.
Yeah, last year, right?
Yeah.
Well, these are our digital team. So these are all of our filmmakers that are part of the New York filmmaking digital community. They're actors, performers, editors, directors, producers, and everything in between. Some of the most talented people we have here, so... it is weird to see them all stare at you like this, isn't it?
It's so weird.
Thanks, guys. This is our first panel that we've ever done here. But one thing that came across when these guys were submitting to us, I asked them, what kind of stuff do you guys want to make? And Key & Peele was by far the top ranked thing that people wanted to be making. So I thought it was appropriate to bring all of you guys in here to talk to them about what the writer's room is like, what the creative process is like. Also, a little bit about yourselves, to give them some background about, you know, what they can do to position themselves to be not just like maybe on Key & Peele, but like what is another version of Key & Peele, you know, what they can be doing in their own personal and creative lives as well. So maybe we just start with like saying who you are and what your role is on the show.
I'm Ian Roberts, and I'm executive producer / showrunner.
My name's Colton Dunn, and I'm a writer / co-producer.
I'm Becky Drysdale, also a writer / co-producer.
Hi, I'm Phil Jackson, a writer.
And so, because showrunner's a name that also got tossed around a lot as like something that people aspire to be. What does that mean to be a showrunner?
Big part of it is head writer, so, you know, looking at everybody's stuff and giving notes, and then dealing with, at the beginning of the show, staffing it up, you know, hiring everybody, editors and the writers and the director, and being part of all that, interfacing with Comedy Central and getting their notes and other stuff like promotions and that kind of stuff. It's kind of like everything running the show, all the little day-to-day things you have to do to keep everything going.
What do co-producers do?
We write.
Co-producer is a credit that you get because of the Writers Guild. So if you write on a show for, you know, multiple seasons, they will say, now you're a co-producer. You don't get paid anymore. You don't do anything else more. It's purely just a title, but it's like a way of saying,
but it
like,
sounded good.
We're glad you guys are here. And, you know?
The next time you get a job and you tell them that, they know that you went past the season. So you must be yeah. someone that people want to work with.
It does help, though, when you're getting staffed on in other jobs to enter at a co-producer level. That actually can be a thing. But
sure.
I'll also say that on Key & Peele specifically, like, whatever that title would mean, we were probably already doing that anyway. Like, we're let in on a lot of creative decision-making anyway, so it didn't really feel like, oh, now we get to be a part of this process, because we sort of already were, I would say. Mm-hmm. At least I get invited to a lot of sort of inside meetings.
There's a lot of co-producer, like,
I don't know if you were invited, you end
I
up
I come in to a lot of...
So... You guys have all performed at UCB, right? Like, you're all UCB people, obviously. Can you talk about that journey from, in particular, I mean, like, we know your journey, but like...
We've heard it.
Yeah. You can go through it.
Tell us everything, Ian.
We don't have books.
Yeah. But, like, you know, how does one, I mean, you guys, I New York to LA. Like, tell me about, like, in particular, you guys, how you went from being performers on the stage to...
I saw the UCB perform in the Red Room in the late 90s on a trip before I was supposed to start college. And I thought it was a great show. And when I went home and started college, I was like, this college sucks. I want to go do this fun stuff that these guys were doing. So I left college, and I moved out here and went through the classes. I interned at the theater. I had to walk Alex Sidis around the theater and show him everything and show him how back then the way we stored our money at the end of the night was in an envelope in a drawer. And went through levels. I was on a team called Pound, which was a Herald team way back in the day. And that was pretty much my adventure. It was, you know, it was from Red Room to Solo Arts. Mm-hmm. And then the first 22nd Street space, and then after that I did Boom Chicago, where I met Becky, and that was out in Amsterdam, and I came back here for a little while and then moved to LA. So that was my journey. It was very small when I started with UCB. It was very, very small, but always very hip and cool, and it also like got me on like Conan O'Brien. I did a lot of the Conan O'Brien stuff back in the day. That you really kind of farmed people out of the theater back then.
How'd you get your first writing job?
My first writing job was on Mad TV, I guess. And I got that through submitting a packet through Jordan Peele, who's Peele from Key and Peele. But my first, you know, my first writing was at UCB as far as sketch shows. I did two shows at UCB after I came back from Amsterdam. And those were really sort of started getting me to generate my sketch writing, were the two, you know, I did shows at the theater. That's my story.
Yeah, I went through the Chicago world a little bit more, I think. By the time I got to New York, I had done a couple of shows at the 22nd Street space, but I kind of missed, like, I did all my, like, training and everything through at Second City and was on a stage at Second City. So by the time I got to UCB New York, I was sort of playing with the, like, those snobby Chicago people who just, like, pop in once a month, and you're like, who the fuck is that guy? And they're all, like, 50. I started... and so we did Let's Have a Ball for 5 years at UCB, and that's when I really kind of, like, got into the UCB world and then started teaching in New York and got more involved in the student community and doing more shows at theater and so on, but I never actually really came up through the UCB thing because it wasn't there. And it's sort of, grown so much and become so enormous, and was lucky enough to kind of be in New York during that boom and be a part of sort of the teaching part of it, and was lucky enough to kind of sneak in through the back door to be on stage relatively frequently.
How'd you get your first writing job?
I did the Aspen Comedy Festival in 2005.
They used to have a comedy festival in Aspen.
Thank you.
Context.
It was a really
big deal, and then it stopped. It used to be a really great opportunity for people to get work, and then it stopped.
I won a sled.
You did?
The sled.
Oh, wow.
That was their award.
Yeah. Oh, that's like gold trophy?
I won an award that was
Tell
my story better.
They invented an award to give Becky at the Aspen.
Yeah, they were like,
They didn't have an award for her show, but her show was so good they made one up.
Thank you, Colton.
What was the award?
Breakout performer of the festival.
Ooh, good.
Whatever. And they gave me like a somebody else's award, and then I got off stage and then like took it back. And we're like, well, thank you. That was the peak. It has never been as good. So after that, I got invited to write for the Big A Sketch Disaster, as I like to call it. And it was great because nobody watched that show. So it was a really great opportunity to like fail in a safe place. And also a great, great practice that like...
She said she watched it.
You did? I'm sorry. But what was great about it was that it was a writing gig and it was a great opportunity to get practice taking your voice and putting it in a package that it might not necessarily want to be in, and figuring out where your voice overlaps with the job that you actually have, which is basically what the job is. It's how do I take what makes me funny and what makes my voice and make it work through this particular, you know, in this particular package, which is absolutely a thing that happens at Key & Peele and anywhere else that you would work. So in that way, it was a really great job. In almost every other way, it was just so gay and so... it was so targeted that there was very little, you know...
What channel was that?
Come on, bro. It was on Logo.
Logo.
Yeah, it's not for you.
Huh? Kate McKinnon was on that?
Yeah, and Kate was on there. And again, that was also a great place to like cut your teeth and know that the stakes were very low. But yeah, that's when she and I became good buddies. And there's some really brilliant, amazing people on that show. It's just a terrible idea for a sketch show. But yeah, that was my first writing, like paid writing gig. And then got more into development and trying to sell TV shows. And we all know how that has gone. Because of all my successful TV shows that are on here.
Phil Jackson.
But yeah.
Yeah. So up until 7 months ago, I was based here in New York. I am a pure product of the UCB New York system. Right? I didn't train anywhere else. I was working
here.
Pure product of New York. I started in 2009 and I was working in advertising, but like, always had an interest in acting and improv, and then found the theater and just fell in love with it like most people do when they find UCB. And what else? Yeah, I think maybe in New York I was known more as an improviser, but I was doing a lot of writing on my own and would put up Spanx. None of them got through, but I put them up all the time. Just did a ton of writing on my own, and then found an agent by just saying yes to a bunch of shows, and then eventually, after submitting packets to a bunch of stuff, Key & Peele came across my agent's desk, and I wrote a packet, and then 2 weeks later, started at Key & Peele. So that's kind of the story. Started like 5 years ago, and
started from the bottom. I'm not familiar with the drama.
Uphill every day.
Well, speaking of packets, what do you read all the packets that come through? What are you looking for in a packet?
Good sketch. It was amazing. I was. It blew my mind how awful so much of the submissions we got were, because it wasn't like now what we got was amazing. The people we got, but literally it's not like, oh geez, now how do we pick between these 20 great ones? It was like, are we gonna find anyone? And then the people we have in each case were, that was it. You know, so it was really surprising that this was people's best work that was being submitted, that people were trying to get jobs. You know, you think, cause I couldn't believe it. I'm like, did they really think they could get a job with this stuff? You know, and you were so happy when you got the ones you're like, and then that was so easy. Like, oh yes. You know, it wasn't like, oh, agonizing. It was like garbage, 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 garbage. Great. And it was very telling that it was a lot of UCB, because I think sketch in particular is so, all comedy, but sketch is just improv written down. You know, the reason why these guys are so good is they know the game of the scene like this. And that's everything about a sketch. But you get these ones, you're like, what? I have with my wife sometimes, I'm like, tell me what was supposed to be funny. Like, what do you think? Like, and I'm really baffled. I'm like, I don't even know what they thought was funny, you know? So, yeah, it was just, it was, it wasn't like some bell curve, you know. It was just crazy. It was like, there's good stuff, and then a bunch of stuff that wasn't useful.
So if you look at that section right there, where they all, I would say they all have game, right?
Yeah.
What within there is something that stood out? Like, because these guys all know game. They've all been through the program. Mm-hmm. What is something that stands out beyond game? Because you go to an improv show, you can see them have game in a sketch, and you're like, there's game there, but I've seen that game played like 8 times. You know, what do you look for? And this goes beyond into the writer's room as well. Like, what's the pitch or what's the games that makes it say, like, that's something we need to make, that's someone I need to hire?
I guess it's, and I'll let these guys talk about it too, but it's just, we have a pitch session at the beginning. It's usually just some nugget that's an area that's kind of recognizable. Because that you can tell when it's a good idea because everyone goes, oh, like, you know that thing. You know, so I think what Key and Peele does well, and it doesn't mean it's the only way to go, but it's the way our sketch show is good. They're absurdist kind of sketch shows. But I think there's a lot of humanly recognizable behavior, you know, so it's a lot of things, I think, and it's all downstream of the stars of the show, you know, what excites them. And I think what excites Keegan and Jordan is that thing that people do, that embarrassing thing or that, so, because they can all find games, but it's always good starting points, guys. You speak.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, we kind of know that we'll find a game, so it's more interesting for us to sit around and be like, what do we want to talk about? You know, that thing that people do, or what the hell's going on with this world issue, or whatever. And we can sit around and just sort of bat around, like, okay, and let's tackle it in this way.
So game comes second sometimes.
Because I feel like I don't want to say yes, because then I feel like it'll be this absolute thing, but. We don't sit in the room and be like, here's the game of this scene. It's more like, here's the thing we want to talk about. A lot of times our pitch sessions will turn into just 2-hour conversations about gun control.
But as people dogpile on the idea,
yeah, we just start improvising
game,
them.
Because that's, that's giving, oh, then this could happen. Yeah. And the writer is like, oh, yeah, that'd be good. And, you know, and those things that people pitch.
But the writer's not actually doing it. There's a writer's assistant who really writes
James,
it down.
We just the real
and then they get the notes sent to them, and they remember all the good pitches that came up, but game is without the game there'd be nothing. I mean, so, but yes, you asked what beyond game, and it's this.
Yeah, and I would also say, as far as like a packet, if you're like setting out a packet and you're like, well, I'm really funny, I got like good game, you know, I could play it. Like, another great thing that I always think about is just style. You know, what is the style? Is there a genre in this scene? How are you exploring that genre in that scene? Is this a commercial parody? How are you attacking that? You know, my thing with packets is always that I try to do like one or two things that are just like straight up sketches. You can't argue about whether or not they're a sketch. And then I'll be like, all right, now here's like my weirdo sketch that he'd probably have to hand to his wife and be like, why is that funny?
But, yeah, when you said that, well, I was like, oh, God.
But, you know, but it's like, you know, in a packet, you want to convey sort of your personality, you know. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll have fun in just the stage directions, you know. I'll end, you know, if a scene ends, I'll be like, yeah, and those guys, you know, leave, and Germany wins World War II this time. You know, just like a weird thing, so that when somebody's reading it, it's exciting. But seriously, like, you know, you're trying to get their attention, and you don't want to confuse them, but you want to show them that you have a taste, or you have a point of view.
And a lot of things will come from, you know, there'll be pitches, because we're writing so many sketches that there'll be some pitches that are like, I have to talk about this, you know, fucking gun control thing. Or he'll just be like, I haven't seen Jordan and Keegan in Top Hat and Tails. What is that? You know, and so working from the outside in or the inside out, whether it's like, I want to explore this themey thing versus like, we haven't done anything in this place or tone.
Phil's great.
Or,
Phil, like, I think the last few months in the writer's room would just come in with like, he'd be like, man, what about sudden infant death?
Date rate's fucked up. Like, yeah, that's a bitch.
Yeah, man. How is that funny, you know? But it would work. But then sometimes we'd break and stuff down and be like, oh, okay, well, that's how we can make this thing funny. Yeah.
And the nice thing, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when my first day, having been a fan of the show already, I was like, I need to come in with these pitches, these super tight premises. So I remember the first thing I pitched was, two Jamaicans that get in a fender bender, but they get in an argument, but then they start bonding over being Jamaican. Maybe the worst sketch I wrote all season, because it was overthought. And I think some of the best ideas in the room were just, yesterday I was at a bar, a guy walked in with a neck brace. That was weird. And then we just talked about it.
That was a great scene. Yeah. I always remember this one. Colton came in and said, we didn't end up doing this, but it really made us laugh. It never got produced, but it was, I'm with this guy, and he talks to me, goes, well, I got some tea.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, what kind of tea? And he just
ends up. He's talking about Starbucks, because he's like, oh, Starbucks, they got all these kinds of teas. How many fucking kinds of teas do you need? He's driving me in the cab, and I'm saying, I don't fucking believe it, man. What the fuck is this? I mean, come on, it's tea. You put a hot water in tea? Oh, no. This guy's driving at like 60 tea. Miles an hour.
They got three tea. They got five. Oh, they got a red.
Oh, too many fucking teas.
But anyway, so, and that was just, but that's the thing, because you usually come in with your phone. He writes down, takes a note on his phone about something that's supposed to be funny. It was just that. It was like, well, look, I was in the cab with this guy yesterday. It was pretty much, well, just write that. And so it was a scene, like, that went crazy. I think crashed at the end. But a lot of, you know, so that's something I think that might intimidate you, and you think, because it's crazy, that the amount of stuff these guys, we're only going to do for this 10-episode season with 64 sketches. They all write at least a sketch a day. And there were six people, so you got 36 sketches a week. In 2 weeks, you've written as many sketches going to be on the whole season. So you imagine how much they write, and we pull from all that the top of the top. But it can seem so intimidating, but you come in with, we call them dookie sessions, and that's by way of Charlie Sanders.
Yeah. Yeah. You float a dookie.
You float a dookie. It's like a little nugget of shit. So at the beginning of it is like nothing, you know, but then you flesh it out, or something. Yeah, every so often something's more fully formed, but you know, it's not all the burdens on you, and it's great. And I think you have to really let your ego go on a show, because then also you're going to get notes to rewrite it. Then you're going to have people, when we do the table read, they're going to pitch in on it. And by the way, once that thing gets the set, Keegan and Jordan are going to riff on it. Mm-hmm. So it's very much, and I remember that was one of my things when in the interviews was, you can't be precious about anything. As long as you assume we all have the same goal, you know, because some people want to keep it theirs, and there's really no value in that. The value is in making it the best sketch it can be, however that happens, and it's no less yours, you know? And these guys are great about that. There's never any resistance.
And then when we got into season 2 and 3 and stuff, people would write on each other's characters and stuff like that. I feel like that's something that, you know, that safety of coming, knowing you can go into a room and be like, I don't know, fucking tires. And know that everyone will like, okay, great, let's figure out what that is.
And I mean, what if a guy wore tires and necklace?
That's what I'm saying. Also not being produced this season. Yeah. But when you know you can go into a room with like nothing, with a tiny piece of poop, and they can turn it into something great, it creates a safety, you know, where. And also a safety where you can pitch something and then 2 days later be like, you know that fucking tire idea? Not into it anymore. On to the next thing. And everyone's like, great, fine. You know, there's a lot of, you will never have a job like this.
I call the heat of it, to me, you know, I used to talk about on MASH, meatball surgery. That's where I know the term from. It's just like, get them in and out. We just got to get them, keep them alive. And keep. At the beginning, you kind of, because it's such a volume, there's some things you just cut bait on. You're like, eh. You know, you tell people, we're tabling it. Whatever, that's, you know, we're just not gonna go pursue that. And then you give notes on stuff, but, and the notes, you have to realize, don't go crazy, because you're gonna do multiple passes, and you gotta keep things going. So you're like, here you go, here's the notes, that's enough for that. Do the read through, you're gonna get a few more notes, and then whatever floats the top out of that, you know. But it's kind of like, you don't over, if something's not going, you just gotta be like, eh. Nice try, whatever. You got, like I say, they're writing so much more than we need. So you don't go, we've probably so much stuff we didn't produce that with some work could be awesome. But at the time, it's like, well, you're writing 5 a week. If you got 3 others that don't need work, those 2 maybe we say, yeah, they would just take mm-hmm. those, you know? Yeah. It doesn't mean they're not good. They probably, you know.
Yeah,
and that process is, you know, I'm sure some of you guys already know this because of what you're doing, but you know, that process is really helpful, even though as like the individual artist, it can feel like horrible when somebody's like, why does he gotta be a policeman? Why don't we just make him a bear? And you're like, what the fuck? But but just doing it, going through that, even though it feels awkward or whatever, it pushes it forward. And maybe you guys have a read later and they're like, yeah, that bear doesn't work. Let's make up a cop again. Great, then you make it back. But maybe it does work, you know, and maybe it works for the group. And, you know, I think that was, you know, even when I said, like, I did two shows at UCB and that kind of what got me into writing more was that it was, for a long time, I would want to write a sketch and I would write, like, half a page. And then I'd be like, wait, where does it go? You know, like, think about it. Or I'd want to shoot something, and I'd be like, well, I want to storyboard it out first. And then I just never storyboard the whole thing. And it's like, you just got to push yourself through, finish it, and then do two more passes on it. And that's the process, and that's how you get shit done. And, you know, you're not really doing it unless you're getting it done.
Well, so get it done. My
out of here.
I tend to get very like I'll be like, I want to write this sketch. It's about body shaming, but it has to rhyme and it's partially in Hebrew. I give myself these very complicated assignments for myself because when you can do them, it's like fucking whatever. But I'll get in my head so much, and then I, you know, this is something, a page I've taken from Colton's book. I'm just like, write the fucking thing. And one of my favorite things I wrote was like, I gotta get out of my head. I'm gonna write about two black guys screaming about pussy.
Yeah.
And I wrote it in a rage.
Like it was only. Look, I know it's nothing.
She hated it. She was like, yeah, this is just
as like a colonoscopy. I was like, just, I had to flush this out of my thing. And then of course we made it.
That's great. And did they do we those characters return?
I don't think it's up there, but I don't know if they might see those guys again.
But that lesson of just like, get over your shit and just make, you know, and then you can get back to your like, it's half animated and but half, you know, sand art or whatever the fuck. But that's something that I've had to learn at Key & Peele is just like, put out stuff. Like one of the first sketch ever on Key & Peele was Liam Neeson's, which turned into like this major, you know, Key & Peele kind of staple thing. And that was such a great example of like, these two valets screaming about Liam Neeson's and just
because I love Liam Neeson.
So I know you do.
You know what the other thing to speak to the rewriting thing, because I remember I had to learn this to embrace and value studio notes, which my first reaction was to, because you can't have that distance. Think of even when you check something for typos, you miss them, and if you looked at it a month later, you'd see them in a heartbeat. But you read what you think is there, and that's not just about spelling errors, it's about content. You knew what your concept was, you need someone, and this has gotta be done this quickly. So you cannot have enough distance working you're not gonna give it in perfect, because to give it in perfect, you have to be looking at it objectively. Yeah. And when we're asking to get it out.
I've had
a couple times.
I've thrown a few perfect sketches.
Yeah, yeah. but most likely that's gonna be very helpful to you.
Yeah.
Although, but you could, you can get screwed up and think, they're stepping on my stuff and getting their nose in the business. It's not that, it's that you can't look at it objectively. Mm-hmm. You're gonna read what you think you wrote, you know, and the other person's seeing what you actually wrote. So, and I know I've had to get used to that and realize, because here's the thing, what the best thing was, going back to something 2 years later that, and it was like reading my own thing, go, who wrote this shit? And it was something we sold, you know, it was like a script, and like, oh, well, some of it was so great, it makes you realize how you need that.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've been at reads, you know, and after we'll read a sketch, you know, we'll kind of go around, everybody will talk about it, and someone will be like, well, you know, I didn't understand that guy was supposed to be homeless, and then you'll be like, oh, but I have this line that said that he was homeless, but that person still did not pick that up. So do I just argue that I'm right because I wrote that they're homeless? Or do I go, well, it didn't translate. Right. Whatever, for whatever reason, he didn't know that that the guy was homeless. So I've got to make it clear. I've got to figure out, you know. And yeah, it's great to try to get that perspective, you know, and step back.
You know, back to packets before, I just remembered one of the problems with the packets that were bad was people wrote too much about trying to make it a black show. And those would be like kind of like, almost embarrassing, like, what the hell's going on? It was so pandering, like, so trying to think what was there, you felt like you weren't getting their voice. They were doing what they thought
the show was
the show would be about. You're like, why would that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was a problem. I don't know if that would be a general thing. How many other shows people would think they could anticipate what the show wanted, but really you got to write what you think.
Well, I would say if you're submitting for a specific, like a sketch show, especially, like you'd want maybe one sketch in there that is like, oh, that's the sketch that I would see on their show, and then everything else. Have fun with it, you know, like try to show them like this is what your show could do. Yeah. That would be my suggestion.
A lot of these guys are writers that are writing for other actors who have their own thing. Mm-hmm. How much do you guys keep that in mind, or like what's that process like? Because you're all performers as well, and what you'd write for yourself, I assume, is different than when you'd write for these guys. Is that true, or tell me?
I'm laughing because when I joined Second City, I went in for Keegan. When he left for Mad TV and I took his place, so there was like a 4-month period where I was doing all of his roles, which is insane. But you know, Jordan and Keegan are so brilliant at what they do, and I've known both of them for so long that when the show happened, I was like, oh god, like the ultimate puppets, you know, like we're all, especially after this many seasons, like so aware of the what Jordan and Keegan can do. That will write things, you know, knowing, like, coming out of me, this is garbage, but as soon as it's getting in Jordan's mouth, it's going to be
Keegan
gold.
Losing his shit screaming or losing his shit laughing.
Yeah, which is like the tea sketch is a perfect example of, like, if you read that, it would be like, what the hell is this? But, but you know, there are sketches that are just like, this is just Keegan yelling because we know that's
yeah, we would do,
amazing.
Like, I know we would get, you know, when they would do notes with the network, sometimes there would be sketches where they'd be like, well, you have to see when Jordan does this.
The French food one. They're like, because they read it, and it's a bunch of gobbledygook French on a page, but then you see it done. And yeah, which we only found out recently was gobbledygook. We thought you wrote real French.
No, it's total nonsense.
But performed, it was hilarious. You know, that the concept was a guy is being a big shot with his girlfriend saying, I know French, I'll order for us. And the guy comes up and the menu is ridiculous. And on the page, it's pretty flat, but performed, it's amazing.
It's
a muscle to work. If you're a writer, you know, writing for other people is a great muscle to work. The first show I did here was called Dances with Bears. And that was a sketch show that I wrote that was just all stuff that I wanted to do. And then the next one I wrote was called High Five. And I just wrote it for all of my friends. And then I just did the lights and the sound.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so I did like the lights and the sound because I really wanted like the lights to go out at the right time and the song. Like I got wrapped up in that shit. But then I was also like, oh, and then I don't even have to worry about being in it. And I can write for it, and it really opens you up a little bit, you know, and especially if you can, you know, get some time to like meet the person and go, oh man, they could really like nail this thing, you know. There's a lot of things that, you know, because especially Becky and I have known Jordan for a very long time, you know, and so there's just sometimes where we're like, oh, this is, you know, if we have Jordan be this character, it's going to be the fucking funniest thing in the world.
And that can sometimes be the inspiration for stuff too, like, you know, I need to see Keegan in this outfit, mm-hmm. or in this character, or in this relationship, or in this setting. And that can be another just, you know, starting place of like, well, I don't know what it is, but I know I gotta put him on a 70s funk soul train set and go from there, you know.
Embrace writing for other people, but also when you do it, just understand that as they process it, it kind of goes to that other note of like taking notes and reworking it. Like, let them make it their own, because they're gonna bring something to it that you probably haven't thought of.
Yeah, when I was putting the packet together and even getting started on this show, I guess the question that I kind of thought that I had in my head was, how do I use my writing sensibility to highlight Jordan and Keegan as performers best? So at the end of a sketch, if I could read that and say, that's something I would actually want to write, and also it does a good job of highlighting these two phenomenal performers, and I think that is probably the best way to merge. Merge both of the worlds, if that makes sense, as opposed to saying, I write this in a particular voice because I think it should be this way, because then it's not even really coming.
But there's also you just going to write funny stuff, because Phil and I shared an office, and we'd write sketches, and it would be for those guys, but I'd be just fucking dying off me and him doing the sketches in our office, you know? But then you just know that it's funny, and then if you give it to some other, you know, to really great performers, they're just going to
knock it out. Because I know you as a performer, when I get your sketches, I often have one of the characters being you in my head. Because I know you wrote it, and I'll read it, kind of imagining how I think. I don't know. It's funny.
Can you talk about writer's room funny versus funny? Is there stuff that, you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like, I assume that's your role to...
I don't think we have that, honestly.
I think, really?
I think it's usually... I don't think we have too much stuff that's... You know, I mean, maybe Becky did one of the... wrote a scene like that and ended up being a great scene. Like, I mean, maybe like, I guess this is never going to get done, but
yeah,
we'll read it. Sorry for wasting your time. It's like, no, that's really good. We'll do it.
But all the stuff I really
like. You know, you mean stuff that, like, is inside and we're laughing but wouldn't be good on the show? I don't feel like we waste our time too much on that.
I got an example of that one. Okay, there was...
Little Homies?
Well, Little Homies. Sure, Little Homies is one, I think. Well, Little Homies, that was one, though, that it was more politics, I think, at the end of the day, that... We had these characters that we would always do, Charlie and I, where we'd be like, "Hey, little homie," and it was these two characters who were like, "Hey, kids, you want to do theater? Come to Little Homie's, you know, theater school." And it was these two weird guys with really wispy shirts, and they were at a beach, and then they'd be in front of a van, and they're like, "We've got a tour van, little homies.
You trying to get this on every single show.
You guys can do a show."
I would come to my office, characters. And this would be pinned up, a closet, be up there again, little homies.
But I mean, ultimately, it was like, what, you know, we had to like make the call of like, well, are these gay characters? And we were like, well, we never say that they're gay, but they kind of have, you know, they have that sort of fey attitude.
There's no way to make it like, not creepy.
Yeah, so then we were like, what are we saying? Are we trying to? So that was one where I guess it made us laugh, but we couldn't really. But I think the one that I was thinking of was something that kind of came up because, I'll have a drink like this in the writer's room.
Oh, yeah.
And for a long time, I would have, like, a soda like that, and I would get up, and I'd get all animated, and then I'd go back to my seat and sit down, and like,
everyone's like...
And at one point, somebody was just like, "You never kick over your thing," and I was like, "Oh, I didn't realize that." And so then we tried to write a scene about a guy who's like, "Woo!" And he's just doing all this stuff.
It's at a party, and the other guy... But it did come down to someone seeing a humanly recognizable thing. You want to be a fun guy... And like not bump people out and be all rules. Yeah. The guy's trying to be cool with it, but it's driving him nuts watching
move his
feet around the cup. Which I think is one of the good things about Key and Peele is you got something like that, but then they found the human thing in there.
We found a human thing.
Is that you want to be, but you're like, could you use a coaster, but you don't want to be that person?
Yeah.
So,
but I felt like ultimately when you took a step back from that sketch, it was like, okay, that was the human thing and that was that thing, but it was never as funny as that, as in that room when we were talking about it, you know? And we just weren't able to get it to that point.
Little Homies, I mean, is a good joke on all of us executive producers because... We felt it wasn't working, and so we got in a room and closed the door, and the four of us worked on it and came back with something that had become definitively the most disturbing,
so upsetting,
horrible scene. And one thing was like, it's coming off too creepy, let us take a pass.
And theirs was like straight up.
Was like, these guys are absolutely pedophiles. and it was so funny because Reddit had just had to say, oh, okay, well,
there's no way to make this not worse.
We made that worse than it ever was.
You guys, Key & Peele seems like one of the most, like, visually interesting sketch shows I can ever see, and like it feels very filmic in its execution. And I can imagine you talked about like reading stage direction or reading things and it dying in a room. Some of these things that I've seen, if I read them, it wouldn't pop to me. Can you talk about like the process of like?
You mean like something like Flickr or?
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I think a big one would be Les Mis, which is it's great just as a. As a like a parody song, but then it's done with that production. It's like takes it to
a whole other
level.
I'd have to give most of the credit to our director Peter, who makes things look like $1 billion for $5. I mean, it's amazing. Like that Les Mis thing, and I was on set for that. I was like, I felt like, oh, all the money from every other sketch has been stolen to make this thing. He's very cinematic, and he knows, you know, if it's a zombie thing, it should look like a zombie movie. If it's an action sequence, it should look like an action.
What he did before Key & Peele is he worked with a group called The Midnight Show, which is a sketch group in Los Angeles, and he just produced all their videos, and Heather Campbell is somebody who wrote over there. So, like, he was working with all this, like, really, that's like what I said, like, the genre stuff. You know, Alex Rubens, who's one of our other writers, like, he will write a sketch, the one where the guy's like, all right,
I'll come back.
Oh, no, I don't want you.
I'm retired.
I'm retired, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the sketch where this military guy, but it has this whole feel of like this late 80s action movie. But it still had that on the page, too, just because Alex, you know, is able to get into that genre, the dialogue and everything. But it's very important that once you have that, yeah, you know, somebody like Peter who just goes for it 100%. You know, a lot of times people get worried. I just worked on a show where they didn't want to do any parody. Their whole thing was, we're not doing any parody. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like, you don't want to do like a Real Housewives parody or something like that. And they were like, no, we don't want to do any parody. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, genre stuff, like any of that stuff.
You know what's
funny?
To me, that would say you can't do a cop scene.
Yeah, because exactly.
I've never actually been arrested. All I know is from TV.
Yeah.
That's right. Genre.
Exactly. So it was this huge, like, I felt like, chances that you're never going to see the show because there's no ER scenes.
Don't do this. So many things that you really know from the tropes of TV.
There was a great scene that one of the guys wrote. This is not on our show. This is another show I worked on. I'm just going to tell you guys because it's such a sad story. But it was this film noir scene where the detective had gotten brain damage. And so his inner monologue was all fucked up. Like, he would like go to do stuff and then his inner monologue would go off and he'd like mispronounce words and like think he was smelling stuff. It was very funny. This really funny sketch. And their note was, let's get rid of the film noir thing. We don't like the detective stuff. And so it just turned into a scene with a guy with brain damage and you heard his narration. And with no style to it. And
we're all big comedy nerds, and we're all, you know, every movie we've seen a billion times. So a lot of pitches will also start with, you know, that scene where X, you know, like,
the guy laughs after they shoot somebody, just, and they're like, what's funny about that?
In the same way as the human behavior thing, a lot of it is like, that scene from that movie, and what's great about that.
We just did Bond torture.
Yeah,
Bond torture scene where the henchman wants to stay in the room instead of being left outside.
Yeah,
well, in every move, they're
the guy's like, get out of the room. And the guy like kind of walks, but he's like peeking back in.
No, that was Rich.
That's Rich. Yeah, and he peeks back in the room, and he's like, what are you doing? Well, then just come in. And he like comes in, but we explore that awkward moment. What if that happened?
That's a really great example, because that pitch was, you know, that scene in the movie where the guy's about to torture the guy, and they're like, give us the room. What if somebody stayed? And a lot of, you know, like, a lot of pitches start that way. Like, that scene in that movie and this zag. And so it's not really parody, but it's and you still get down to that human thing.
And I hope it might be cool if Key and Peele changes sketch a little bit moving forward, because I think it was an institutionalized, sort of old-fashioned thing that sketch should be more shoddily produced. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, like, this thing of sketch and having, like wobbling backdrops. And great sketch shows too, by the way. Monty Python has that aesthetic. Like, it just looks awful. The background scenes are so obviously sets. But I think it's like downstream from some time when, I don't know, maybe it was done for a reason. You know, like, it's show of shows, and things are like painted backdrops that represent the background.
Right. Well, and I think it's probably some of the stuff that like the producers and the editors in here are working with, but it's that, you know, what Atencio is able to do is give it production value. And so, you know, generally with a sketch show, you have all these locations. You can't actually get all of that shit. You know, you can't have, you know, if you're going to have a sketch show and it's got, you know, 8 scenes and they're all in a completely different location and they have like an airplane, you're not going to get all that shit. But you work with somebody like Atencio who really racks his brain. How can I make it look like that's real? Mm-hmm. How can I put us in this submarine?
And what are the other tropes of those genres besides the locations and the things that actually cost money? How are they edited? Mm-hmm. How are they shot? What's the grain of the film? You know, as opposed to it being like, well, we can't afford to do this. Is there a way we can use what else sort of is indicative of that genre to get the same thing across without spending all the, you know,
I also say that the look was downstream of a philosophical approach to the show, too. And it's, I think, something that I hope we stress here at UCB is that everything that's not the comedy should be what it would really be. Mm-hmm. So the comedy shows up. And it's so great to have that extra element, which most shows don't get, is that it looks like the real movie. So how funny is it when the guy's acting bizarre and it's right? Because if it doesn't look right, it's like, well, maybe that would happen. Because Nothing else looks weird. Right, you know? And I think that is, yeah, it's so great that we have a director who can make that thing that we try to do in our writing, you know, in the words, everything should be like the reality except for the comedy part, that we can actually have the visuals work that
way. I gotta say, just seeing the selection process for the sketches that are gonna get produced, at least, it really showed me the power of the collective group, because there's some sketches of mine that, like, got through and I was like, I guess this one versus this one, like, I don't see it, but then I go to set and be like, ah, okay, they saw something that I just didn't see in the sketch that I wrote. So I think,
can you give an example of one?
This
won't help you, I'm just interested because you haven't seen these.
Well, I think like Sex Detective is like a ridiculous sketch. Like, I didn't know that, like, but the look and aesthetic of that was I think brought it over the top. And even like the football one that we just did.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, like, a million rains.
Well, yeah, they did that with. We talked about that too with one that I did last season called Noise, where Peter's like, I want it to rain, and like we didn't write any rain in either of the sketches, but he's like, I want that moment to have rain. And
really good.
You know, and like that's exactly what he talks. I want that moment to have rain. What? That's.
Yeah, so like in a football sketch, the guy has a brain injury, and he's trying to give that inspirational speech that you know from sports movies, but he keeps on screwing up. And so to heighten the moment of inspirational thing, you know that scene in the movie where it's pouring rain and we got to do it. And in yours, the reason it was used
it's like
is
a
because it's yeah, those yeah. things when in the yeah. romance, or Tom Cruise is standing out in the rain mm-hmm. in... whatever Maguire, whatever the hell it was.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, hey, you know, I love you. You know, it's like those things, you know, for some reason the guy stands in the rain.
If he's saying it in the rain, he really must be.
Yeah, he doesn't care if he gets soaking wet and he loves her so much.
So speaking of that, the director then feels like a very collaborative part of this process that, like,
yes.
Totally.
And what is your, I mean, you're talking about your relationship with it, but like specifically, you guys do hand the reins over to them. To some extent, right? What is that relationship like, though?
Well, for us, it's. I mean, the way our show works is we write everything, and then they go shoot it. And so with the EPs, which are Ian and Jay, Jordan and Keegan, and then the director, they decide what they're going to do, and then they go do it. And we're done. Our job is done. We've kind of given them the stuff.
I remember we combined one of your scenes. You're like, hey, how'd that end together?
Because he
had this one thing, this one funny scene where there was a zombie with no arms and legs who kept on hanging out with this other zombie, kind of like...
It's basically a zombie didn't want to hang out with the really zombie. Fucked up zombie, and so he like kept trying to like get away from the zombie that had no arms and legs, but he kept showing up, and so then it ends with him taking that creepy zombie out to the woods, and it's the Of Mice of Men ending, and he shoots the zombie. And then I had another sketch with freestyle rapper.
Yeah.
And it's like...
With the hype man.
The hype man is crazy. And so when I saw it in the show, I was like, oh, cool, it's the hype man sketch. They shot it. And then it gets to the end, I'm like, oh, shit, they put the end from the other sketch onto that sketch.
But it was funny. It's not arbitrary. In both things, you had a guy who was cramping your style.
Yeah.
I want to be stuck with this guy. I don't want to be stuck with this guy. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, we can use that thing we really love from that scene that we're not doing and stick it on this scene that we love, and you know.
Totally work. that's that process. And it doesn't always feel great as a writer. You know, you're like, you can be guarded about your stuff, and then, oh my God, they're going to do this, this, and this. But that's part of the process, you know?
We had a scene we just shot. It changed half hour before we did it. It was the Bond scene with the guy. And he goes, you know, to make it a little more Key and Peele, I think that the thug, because they were both Eastern European. My guy's not Eastern European. He's like urban black. And so he's like, yo, what you should do, though? And so it became this, the last second.
No, I pointed at you because that's one of the joys of Key and Peele is when Ian
does
the black characters.
But it's wonderful, you know, and like you'll I know, especially, you know, like at Funny or Die or other places, like the writers will write something. And then they'll give it to a director and a producer to make it.
And then, like, the writer is constantly running back to their office, like, oh, I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe they're doing that. You know, and that's an okay, it's understandable why you feel that way, but it's also there's a big strength in just going, all right, they have it. And if you can't handle it, then you direct it. But you should really be able to give it to a director, and that's what they're going to do because, again, they're not just worried about reading it off the page. They're filling the whole frame and telling a whole story visually, and sometimes things have to change on the page in order to do that.
And why it shouldn't be a problem is that first thing, which was like the one thing that was the most important for me in the interviews to hire the writers. You get that we're all on the same team here, you know, so it changed. You got to assume the change is for the better if you respect those people. So if you respect Peter and these guys respect us as executive producers, well, we're just trying to, it's your scene. We're just thinking, trying to shape it. And like, so, you know.
I also think that after season one, sorry.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
No, I was going to say after season one.
You might
want to
compliment me on my black dialect.
Yeah. I'll leave all the room you want for that.
I'm actually Latino, so I don't know what. After
season one, once, you know, which was my first experience working with Peter, too, and you see what he does and the way his Play-Doh Fun Factory works, you know, then you can start writing and be like, oh, I know how Peter is going to see this, read this, and you know, like, in the same way that we were learning about Jordan and Keegan and how things were going to come out of their mouths, being able to write, like, oh, Peter's going to have a field day with this, and he's going to know exactly what this is,
or
and so on.
It.
Or he'll hate it.
Like, I wrote a sketch that was like, they kept wheeling in the Shark Tank, you remember that? Like, it was a...
Yeah.
It was like a Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, so yeah.
There was a sketch where it was like, we're rich! And then they'd have a big party, but then somebody come in and be like, we're broke again.
And all the hookers
and
would become crack whores.
The crack whore, everyone would become a crack whore and like kill themselves. But every time they got rich again, somebody would wheel in a shark tank. Wheel a shark in it. And I remember sitting at the table, and Peter's just going, no. And he has a little book next to him, and he just kept writing, no shark. No shark on his book.
Oh yeah, I wanna put horses in almost every sketch that I write.
That's basically we've never had a Western.
We should get that question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I know it's kind of particularly Q&A moment, but on the subject of directors, is it rare to have the same director for, like, does he do your whole season and then also?
Yes,
he does, and it's rare. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot because Jordan Keegan and these guys really fought for him. To do that, but it is rare. Normally,
we had a real sit down with him. We go like, so you know, your life will be ruined, right, by doing this. And we're like, you're young, you're willing to make it because it's. He killed himself some of those seasons. Yeah, he worked all the weekends, and yeah, it's very unusual. Usually, you work every other episode so you can do the post on the episode. He does post on the weekends, and then a huge amount of post after the whole season.
Yeah, it's a very, very hands-on thing when you're directing. And even in television, you know, that you'll watch, you know, your shows, those are usually always different directors who come in. You know, you might go into a Parks and Rec episode one week and it's Rob Schraub is directing, and then you go on another week and Eric Appel is directing. You know, the directors usually, unless, you know, they do a movie, but when it comes to television, it's usually not the same guy every week.
Let's open up to questions from the room now.
I would say, do you ever feel the pressure to go away from observational? Like, I see this in life, and this is interesting. Because I feel like there is that pressure in sketch to go otherworldly, because you want to stretch your ideas, you want to get bigger. So I feel like, do you ever have that pressure to feel like, oh, let's veer away from observational, and like, where even you're walking down the street and you can't even see anything anymore, because you're like, we have to be in a spaceship on the moon, you know, because that's more interesting or something.
We do that.
I mean, yeah, we'll do that, you know, like... I don't, you know, sometimes those are, though, it is a little hard, because again, you're going through the EP, and then you're going through all the people at Comedy Central, so whatever weird idea you have is going to have to go through this filter, and enough people are going to have to go, yeah, I can wrap my head around. Your marbles might be an example of something that's not necessarily an observational sketch, it's just a weird sketch.
Funny, I guess it is for me, because I'm a weirdo.
Yeah.
When I see, there was something about that, like, I know what that means, it's like a kid thing. Kid sees something, what would that be like in my mouth?
The premise of the sketch is the guy's in the office getting interviewed, and the guy has a bowl of marbles on his desk. And so the guy's getting interviewed, it's like listening to the boss talk, and then he looks over at the marbles, and we just hear his voiceover, he's like, put those marbles in your mouth. I'm gonna put those marbles in my mouth. I'm gonna put those marbles in my mouth. And then he starts putting marbles in his mouth. The guy's like, whoa, don't do that, you'll choke. But it's like, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, but yeah, I guess it's observational to you. I think it's just a weird thing, but we try to do that.
But I also think, what, you can go as crazy out there as you want. You can go to space, you can go dimension Z, wherever you wanna go, and it's still, in order to have a game that makes the sketch work, it's probably still gonna be tied to something grounded, even if it's grounded aliens. You know what I mean? Like we'll do something like Auction Block or something. It's still about two guys one-upping each other, you know. And I think our strongest scenes are things that can be, you know, yeah. We can put it on an Auction Block, and then it's like edgy and racial and whatever. But it's the dynamic of two dudes, you know, trying to one-up each other. You can put that on a spaceship, or it can be two hunks of cheese doing it. But it's still grounded in that human thing, I feel like, and it, you know, as far away from as crazy as you want to go, I feel like grounding it in something like that always is the thing that makes it move forward and not just crazy and alienating.
It wasn't a directive necessarily that said we need to go away from observational, but I think at the beginning of the season there was a directive that was, there's been three seasons of the show, let's at least be thinking about ways to present stuff that maybe hasn't been seen before. So it's not as cut and dry, I think, as the question you're asking, but I think there was a conversation had in the room about, let's just keep in mind maybe there's an opportunity to do things that push it a little bit.
Mr. T, I guess, could be an example of something that was like a really weird sketch, but still it kind of cut down to like the humanness of Mr. T not wanting people to make fun of his hair.
Right, the things you care about are the things
that affect
you. Well,
that was also a heavy parody, right? It was off an existing thing that he did.
Yeah. It was like off of, it was definitely a parody, but and also one that was amped up by the direction.
But it's still, to me, it's still you actively care about the things that affect you, which is a human
thing. It's a human thing, and we're all humans.
But you know, I think sketch show, like, that's part of the tone of our show. I think that things tend to be a little more human observation, and whereas some shows might have more absurdist stuff, you know, like I think Key and Peele has a much different tone than Monty Python, both great sketch shows, you know.
Crawl, I mean, definitely a different tone than
you
Crawl.
Guys have the banter in between sketches, which feels like sometimes establishes the game or the reality that you're talking about, right? I mean, that's
sometimes,
what
yeah.
Every so often it's really used to sort of tee up, like the scene may work better because of it, but mostly it was a thing that we know that people tend to like to have something they can dependably come back to, and since other shows, you have the same character every week, if it's a sitcom or a, you know, procedural, that's our thing, that's the one dependable thing.
Was a thing too, I think originally that came from Comedy Central.
That's
that was something
element.
that was something that they were like, we think this would be good, and we were all kind of like, oh, but we can make funny sketches and we don't need to have them walk out, and that's not really those guys aren't stand-ups, that was never really their strength, but I think we took the note and then we found how it would benefit our show, you know, and so that it was, you know, a lot of ways it was kind of like, well, that's what Dave Chappelle did, so that's what we want you guys to do. And I think at first we even kind of felt that way. And if you watch the first season, we kind of don't set up things because that's what Dave Chappelle would like literally walk out and be like, what if Samuel Jackson had beer? And then you go to that thing. And so we were trying like to almost not set up stuff and more just introduce the audience to Jordan and Keegan. But then it sort of morphed into this thing where you kind of nailed it. Like they won't necessarily set up a sketch, but they'll start to set up the reality of that sketch, or the world, or just the point of view that we're about to go into. And I feel like those are the things that if you watch over the seasons that have aired, have really grown and become something that maybe kind of started out feeling very not organic at all.
Well, because they weren't. They were written.
Yeah.
And now they're not written.
Now the
guys just talk before the show, before the live taping, and go, we could do this, and we sit around, and we say, oh, you know.
And that
know,
really is their dynamic. They're just like best buddies
the purpose of that was to get to know them, was what the network wanted. And ironically, you get to know them better if they're just talking about the scene as themselves than telling about, because that's not really, you want to see how they interact with each other. And instead, we were mistakenly talking about their past. with each other.
And we have sketches that we wrote. We have sketches that we wrote that we ended up being like, oh, that'd just be better as a stage segment. You know, we'd write the whole sketch and then realize it's funnier to hear Jordan and Keegan talking about it than
the guys that walk around the world that keep the guy keeps saying goodbye too far down the block. Went from a sketch to being something that we did live on stage.
And white
with
guys
him.
Fighting, oh, yes. White dudes away. Fighting.
Yeah, white guys fight.
I was one of those applicants that when interviewed was like, yes, I want to do stuff like Key and Peele. So I really identified with that.
You just made my heart go like this because I thought you were going to
say that. She submitted that. I submitted a packet.
Which, by the way, why am I? I just realized. I'm being taped, so somewhere out there, someone who submitted, I should go ahead and let my heart drop anyway.
That's
I did just tell
her. So I'm thankful it was not one of those, but I definitely was like, I want to make stuff like this. So I was so excited when you guys were, when I heard that you guys were going to be our first panel. And what I'm struck by is the chemistry between you guys and the level of trust, and it's come up several times throughout the discussion, and I'm wondering if you think this is something special that's created, like show by show, or as a showrunner, is like where does the buck stop, and who creates that level of trust, and how do you foster that kind of environment? And
I'm not an expert. Yeah. I've only been two shows. I've done this, but I think that. We trust them and respect you guys, you know, and I think that that would be part of it. Another thing is we do all come from, in some way, some improvisation background. It's just some pretty high degree in most
Except
cases.
Except for Alex Rubens.
Who took classes,
took all the classes
at UCB. Yeah. So we have the same, like I say, one of the reasons why it's so easy and why they all got the jobs, they were the ones, because, well, that's not going to be hard. It's not going to be hard. I don't have to do a lot with your sketches because you... write good sketches, so there's that, and I think, I don't know, we were very reasonable about, when you're done, go home, you know, we didn't have a stupid kind of, well, you
be here till 4 in the
morning, work here till whatever, you wrote two good sketches,
there's
go home.
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things that worked out to kind of the synergy that we had on this show. One of them, I mean, you know, some of us had worked together for years and years before on different shows and different theater companies. So that really helped. You know, for a lot of us, you know, for like me and Charlie, especially, you know, like Ian is one of our heroes. So like working with him, it was like whatever note he gave, we were like, awesome, Ian said something about the sketch. But so you kind of just had that, like, we you know, had this sort of family feeling. But I think the other thing that it is kind of what he's saying is that, like, you know, because I've worked on other shows, so like, you know, I'll give an example of like working at a late night show where you would go in at 8 in the morning and you'd have to pitch, you know, 5, you know, desk segments by, you know, 10 o'clock, and then maybe you write one of them, and then you just sit there and you wait to either hear back about something or not hear back about something, and you're like, oh, well, you know, it's 5, can I go? And they're like, no, we might need you. You know, there's that kind of... I got, you know, some of the people maybe who come out, they'll talk about like a Harvard writing room where it's like they will just stay there until like 10 o'clock at night, you know, and just exhaust every idea. And it's, you know, not so much about like if Becky had an idea that I would be like, oh, here's a cool idea, let me add to it. It would be more the kind of writer's room where Becky has an idea and I go, no, that's dumb. Here's my idea. No, that's dumb. Here's my idea. And so we didn't have that kind of process. And that process may work for some people. There's, you know, some very successful shows that have a writing process where you go in and you're there from 8, you know, the community, their writer's room, like, they would stay until, like, 4 in the morning, you know, sometimes all night until the next day. And then they'd be like, okay, you can go home at 8 a.m. and have some breakfast and lunch and then come back when you can. And, you know, that will make you crazy. So, you know, but it generates... you know, the certain kind of...
I'd say another thing on a show is that things are all downstream of whoever has the most power, and that's Keegan and Jordan in this case. And Keegan and Jordan are two of the nicest guys that you could know. And so it's pleasant because they're not dicks.
And
that's not going to be tolerated. If the guys that are the biggest guy, you know, the most powerful guys in the room aren't dicks, then how can you possibly be a dick? Mm-hmm. But people, you know, they always say if somebody kicks a dog, they probably got kicked by a guy who got kicked by a guy who got kicked by a guy. You know, so it's kind of trickled down.
And there's so much play. Like, the sense of play at work is so high. You know, I mean, literal play. You know, we have a ping pong table that's just, like, literally people back and forth all day long, you know. And you know, like Colton said, I worked with Jordan, I worked with Keegan, and then Colton and I worked together in Amsterdam, and then Colton worked with Keegan and Jordan at MAD, and Keegan and I worked with Rich at Second City. So, like, even at those of us who hadn't, like, worked together, there was still that, like, voucher of, like, this is part of the, you know, we're all kind of part of this sort of family. But I think that's a huge part of it, that Keegan and Jordan's relationship, which is so playful, gets passed down. Like,
well, I'm very much of the, with comedy, that you kind of keep the pump primed or you kind of grease the groove. So I want to be things to be funny all day, you know, but some people don't like that. Some people are like, okay, let's move on. Come on, we got work to do. And it's like, but our work is comedy. So I don't consider 15 minutes of, in quotation marks, unproductive time because we're fucking off.
Well, and then our other showrunner, Jay, has to be like, we've been talking about farts for 5 hours. We really do have to make a show.
Which, by the way, there always has to be someone that's willing to say.
And thank God, because it is true.
But I mean, that's my opinion. And I strongly believe that with comedy, you got to be having fun. Like, what are we doing? It'd be so strange, because then it's like being warmed up. You know, it's then, oh yeah, now we can just go do something. But if it was, and that thing about staying, like, these, I can't imagine writing comedy and feel like I'm being tortured and abused. You know, so someone's making me stay 14 hours. How am I, now I'm supposed to be funny when you're doing this weird ritualized punishment?
They do pay you for those jobs.
They do.
Yeah, but also, like, there are days where we'll just, like, I'll certainly have days where I'm like, I got nothing. I am the least funniest person in the world today. I'm sad, my dog has a thing, whatever. And there's never that, like, where are your two sketches for the day? You know, there's always kind of this understanding, like, the work's gonna get done, and it does. And we all have that sort of, like, freedom to not feel like we're in that torture zone, you know?
This after working on this season, I now realize that just doing bits with my friends when I was in New York, I probably missed out on, like, hundreds of sketches.
Oh, yeah.
Just by virtue of, like, the things that we would end up writing, just kind of bullshitting. Mm-hmm. And, like Negro Town, for example. Like, it's just, like, certain sketches that are, like, so ridiculous, you end up not pitching it or ideating around it in the writer's room, but it's just you guys kind of bouncing ideas off of one another. And it was definitely that type of environment where all the time it's just kind of say whatever you want and then...
I could think of one. These guys came in, because they always come in, like, the joke was that they would waste my time and drive me crazy. And so they came in and did this poetry reading for me, where they all read poems to me. Well, guess what?
But like slam poetry.
Yeah. We're probably going to do this scene, which came out of which he then, his poem was really harshly, like, sexual.
It was two,
I think it was just, like, it was about his troubled sexuality. Kind of, like,
But
off of that, it's not a waste of time. Off of that, we got a scene. You know, he then wrote a whole scene about these guys who feel like they're really bonding with the audience. It seems like they want to break down racial barriers. But we have more in common than differences. And then it's all about sex.
Yeah, we all like to, and then insert fucked up sex.
No one could possibly relate
like
to
that.
So, when you're working in comedy, when people are just goofing around, it's so funny. To me, it's never time wasted.
And Negro Town, we were just on the balcony.
Yeah.
Singing it.
Yep.
That, for days, I was hearing the inception of that scene, because I just hear... In Negro Town, down the hallway, for days, this was just a bit that was going on in the office. And then it gets submitted, it's like,
and now it's
time for, like, maybe one or two more questions.
Okay.
We'll do both of yours.
My question is, writing seems like such a collaborative thing, especially with you guys, and most of the writing that I do is with neither my writing partner or my sketch team, and the best stuff comes because we're all riffing with each other. But you have to do a sketch packet that's just yours. So I guess, what's the best way to do that? I mean, is it just volume, doing a lot by yourself?
I think still got the riffs. There could be a riff where you were the one kind of pushing it along. Like, the other person was, you're within your, you know, I think, you know, sometimes you're within your right to say, that's kind of mine, or maybe you run it by the person and say, hey, I think I want to write that up. Mm-hmm. You know, you know those things where you drive them.
Yeah.
Read it with people.
Yeah.
I have no issue. I'll as soon as I finish a sketch, the first thing I do is I print it up and I walk into somebody else's office and I go, hey, read this with me. And then I read it with them and maybe they go, oh, this thing would be funny. Or I'll be like, oh, now that I heard out loud, I have this. But just get out and read it with people. You know, it's still your thing. You know, I mean, they would not be a good friend if they, like, read it with you and then you got a job and they're like, hey, man, you read that with me.
I struggle with that a lot, though, too, because the place where I feel the least creative is at a desk on a computer. Like, I don't write that way. So I've had to kind of learn how to, like, either be on a couch or, like, put a leg, whatever. But I also don't write my strongest on my own either. So it's part of it is just figuring out what works for you, and that can change on a daily basis. Like,
I think
sometimes,
kind of
like,
keep
I gotta
it
be
the most improvisational. Like, maybe speak it out loud if that's your kind of thing before you. Like, don't change everything you do. If the reason you're good at writing is maybe part of it's because you've been improvising. You know, when I write in our partnership, I don't do the key. I type so badly, I'd never get out things well enough, you know, and even when I do rewrites and stuff, I'll often get James to be there, and I'll say, James, and just tell him what to do. No, James, we have an awesome writer's assistant. Yeah.
I'm trying to think about how the best way to word this. How do you guys balance race a little bit? Because some of the sketches, clearly everyone likes Key and Peele, doesn't matter the race, but some of the stuff they do is kind of like super urban. So is there ever like the translator? Obama's translator, like some of the stuff he says is super like urban, you know, but it's like, how do you guys make that stuff relatable? Or is there ever a question of like, is this too black or anything like that? Or is it just kind of like, let's just
I think keeping it relatable, and I don't write a lot of Luthers, but keeping it still on that relatable level of, God, I wish I could say this. You know what I mean? As opposed to it being it's, you know, it's coming out. I always think of shit as in terms of chips and salsa. Like, this is what I'm trying to serve up, and this is the package I'm going to serve it in. But, you know, like, while it is packaged in a racial, you know, Tostito scoop, the salsa is still, man, if only I could say what I really wanted to say. So I feel like there's still that relatability. I don't know. But, again, that's probably more of a new question.
What the fuck's that supposed to be? Because
you write the more Luthers.
Oh, okay.
because it's your sketch, Colton.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know that when, you know, in the first season we sort of had that stuff and we knew it was going to be there. And so we sort of felt like maybe we didn't really need to hit it too hard. Then as we got sort of in this last season, we were like, let's go ahead and embrace it. You know, there definitely was, because both Jordan Keegan and I all worked at Mad TV. And a lot of their job there was to do, like, black people sketches. And that's what we had to do there. And so we kind of didn't necessarily want to do that. We wanted to do things with sort of a different take on them. But then as we got into, you know, later on the season, we kind of opened up the gates a little bit more. And we're like, all right, let's go ahead and, you know, explore some of these, you know, more urban, ideals and situations. But really it just comes down to those two guys. You know, they bring their experience to whatever sketch it is that we write. Here's an example. So I wrote a sketch about a gang, and a bunch of people in the gang, and one guy in the gang doesn't want to sit down in a chair. And it was about a black gang. But then, as it went through the process, they decided to make it a Latino gang.
I think that was off of Latino guys always coming up to them and saying, man, you gotta do us,
you
man.
You gotta do us. They definitely do that a lot. But there was also that element too, that once we did it, we were like, oh, well, you know, there's also that kind of like, you know, sort of that stereotypical macho Latino, you know, that attitude, mas macho, which kind of played into that game a little bit more and just in the culture. So we were like, well, maybe, you know, it works a little bit better. But it started out, it was like a gang Crips, and it was just this guy's like, I ain't sitting in no chair. But we just kind of changed it up. But again, it really kind of comes down to them and their voice.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there definitely is. You'd be like, oh, there's a lot of, like, there's black stuff on that show or whatever what somebody would say. But it's really their experience and our experience as writers and what we bring to it. and, you know, and just general outcast of society, you know?
I think I personally think that the show balances it well because we're laughing at the right thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's never a sketch that's like, look at how urban these guys are. Let's laugh at how stereotypically urban they're being. The game always tends to be something else. And then, like Colton's saying, you manifest the game through these urban characters as opposed to saying, let's put our hat backwards and just laugh at being black, which I don't think there's a...
I think it's funny.
She thinks that's hilarious.
When Jordan just made that choice in that Bond scene to go urban, he said, because these are things you would see in a movie. And he thought, it's funny to make this guy not seem from that world. That was a good way to not be from that world.
But that's not the game. That's still not the game in the scene.
I think there's also really funny conversations we get. Like, we'll be at a table read, and Jordan and Keegan will be seeing a sketch for the first time and come, like, hard out of the gate with some scene and be like, yeah, I'll have the turkey sandwich. And we're like, no, Jordan, wrong black guy.
No.
Just a normal guy.
And we will have conversations where
he'll often ask before they read, what are we doing here?
And that's, having worked with Jordan,
man,
you know.
Fuck you! Yeah. No, you're the Pope.
They will be like, what kind of black guy is this? You know, is this like... You know, and their range of black guys is so enormous, and a lot of it has to do with them feeling kind of raceless in a way too. And when we do white characters, they don't necessarily put on white face unless that's the, you know, game. But you know, they will often, and it's actually, I don't think I've talked about it, but one of my favorite things at Key and Peele is when they come hard out of the gate as just the wrong shade of black. but that is, you know, that is a conversation that we have. Like, is it right, or, you know, is it right for them to just be these thugged out black dudes, or is it right for them to just be like suburban guys having their wives?
Are we doing too much, you know, biracial stuff? Should we, you know, pull back on that? We, you know, and it also comes down to what's up on our board. You know, halfway through the writing session,
too,
like,
much black.
We're kind of nailing the stuff. We got it. Let's, you know, let's open it up. Where else can we go? What else can we explore?
I know a thing that Jordan always says is, what can we do that no one else can do? Mm-hmm. Because of
who they are.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that's already been spoken about is the slave scene where they're both wanting to be bought is really about pride. But they can put it in a context that's a super heightened context that you can be so screwed up about pride that you could lose sight of what matters, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so really it's just using, in that case, it's using race to make a context that you couldn't do if you're white, and it's makes the strongest point about how idiotic you can be once your pride gets involved with something, you know? So.
And equally doing stuff about how black they're not, you know, and that being an insecurity, you know, of both of them. I think, what was it, Soul Food? There have been a couple of
the guy at
trying
the party
to out
that
black
doesn't
each
talk
other.
Black to them.
Yeah. You know. So we can get into the sort of, you know, more layers of that racial stuff.
So thank you guys so much for coming. I'm going to wrap it up, but I want to ask if you guys, because you're all, like, Phil, this is your first writing job, right? Ian, you've been doing comedy for years.
He's already working on something else.
Yeah, he's already.
Checking the time, I got to do a notes call.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
He still gives us notes, even though we don't work anymore.
Can you guys give some small nugget of advice for these guys who are in their stage of their career right now that you could pass on and say, like, this is what you guys could be working on, or here's something that I wish somebody told me when I was... like coming up through the UCB system or where you guys are?
I would say do whatever interests you, no matter how non-commercial it seems. And this comes from, at a certain point in my life, I thought I made a decision, was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm living my life now, I just want to enjoy what I'm doing. And I said, I'm done going doing straight acting. I'm just gonna do these crazy sketch shows with the Upright Citizens Brigade and improvise, even though nothing can ever come of that. And then my whole cool life is all downstream of that. So I think when it's that cliched advice, it's like, just follow your heart, you know, and do specific things and don't try to get on the winning team. Start your own team, you know what I mean? And I mean that figuratively, you know. Don't try to get with the establishment. fit yourself in. Forget about fitting in. Do something interesting that people will find you and go from there.
Yeah. Chess, I guess, would be my suggestion. Play more chess so that your brain starts thinking more and more moves ahead. If you're, you know, directors or, you know, writers, like, you should never be so wrapped up on that one thing that you're working on. Work on it. Be honest about it. But be ready to be done with it and move on to the next thing. Because as long as you keep doing that, you'll keep advancing and you'll keep getting better. I think it's Aerosmith. They asked Aerosmith, like, how'd you guys do it, man? You guys have so many number one hits. How'd you do it? And they're like, we just didn't stop. We just kept making another album and doing more songs. So don't stop.
Yeah.
Keep going and play more chess.
They didn't want to miss a thing. Something I'm dealing with now that...
Oh, just tweeted it immediately. Somebody tweeted, play more chess.
It might have been you. That's a voice activated thing. Something I'm dealing with now, and I wish someone had said to me then, whenever then was, like, two things. One, right now you're in a time and place where, like, you can make shit and get people to see it. Like, you can make stuff and put it on the internet, and, like, people will watch it, and you can make stuff on your computer. Like, that's even new to me. Mm-hmm. But there is this thing of, like, once you get your job or you make it or you get an agent or you're doing it, that you stop making that stuff that you just love to make for the sake of making it. Don't stop making the shit that you make just for the sake of making it. That's something that I've found with myself, that I'm like, oh, now you get caught up in, like, oh, can I sell this movie, or can I get this job, or can I translate this into something that I can parlay into some gig, or, you know, as opposed to just, like, where, you know, you are now, or where I was, you know, before all this, of just, like, I just made shit because I couldn't stop making it. And then you do, or hopefully you don't. So I would say, you know, get the job, you know, sell the fucking thing, and keep doing all that shit that you did to get to that point. I'd say even double down, you know, because... You know,
poker and chess.
Yeah. Double
blackjack,
down.
Blackjack.
Chess,
gonna
poker,
always take a hit.
Dragon,
never
bet
hit
on black.
17.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really, like, finding now, that I'm like, fuck, if I was also just making stuff during that whole period of, like, trying to sell things and staff on things and write things, I would have so much shit that I had made. So, and especially now when you have the ability to make stuff for yourself the way you weren't able to even 5 years ago. Just put shit out there, because you never know when, you know, some tiny nugget, I'm not referring to you as a tiny nugget. What was the thing? Is that an infant death?
Yeah.
It just came up on Twitter.
Yeah, it's like some shit nugget.
It's a tiny nugget.
No, like, you never know when some, like, little duke will turn into a really great piece, so just put stuff out and make stuff. That would be my...
Keep pooping.
Keep on doing.
Yeah, mine would be, and just having time now to, like, write more stuff on my own now that the writing period is over. It's just to, something I'm trying to work on is to be more critical of the actual draft once it's done, as opposed to being critical of the process. I think I have a tendency to maybe get in my own way. I'm like 15 pages into a pilot, and I'm like, oh, is this really gonna be good? Should I have done this scene? Whereas I just need to keep going and then actually have a finished product, then go back and, you know, interrogate once I actually have the draft. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, I think in the past, like, year, finding people to put a critical eye on stuff I've written has helped me tremendously for stuff I've, like, self-produced. I've done stuff with, like, Tom Capps and Kevin Etherston, and those guys have looked at stuff I've written and actually helped. Like, I had a draft of a video, would have been a 9-minute video had I done it the way that I had initially written. They were like, this is probably 3 different videos. So just showing people that you trust work that you're passionate about only makes it better as mm-hmm. well. So.
All right, thanks very much, guys. Let's get together now.
UCB Digital Podcast is brought to you by UCB Comedy. Visit the YouTube site, youtube.com/UCB Comedy, for new videos every weekday from New York to Los Angeles. The best videos you'll ever see. Follow us on Twitter at UCB Comedy, on Facebook at UCB Comedy, on Tumblr at UCB Comedy, on Instagram at UCB Comedy.